time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Good to have you with us, everybody. We're coming up on the MBA conference just around the corner, a couple weeks out, a couple Mondays out. Just talking to Alice about it, hoping to see you there. But excited to have this opportunity to come before you on this Columbus Day. For many of our banker listeners, it's a day off. For many of our regular mortgage banking listeners, is there any day off for regular mortgage bankers? It just seems like it's so busy out there. Everyone's tongue is just hanging out in exhaustion. But keep it up. We're doing so well for the economy. We're helping so many people refinance homes. And this is an industry that can make such a difference in people's lives. And this podcast is having some real impact as well on so many that listen to it. We appreciate you as our listeners. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. And we're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format anytime and anywhere. Just looking at some statistics, we've got some more people interested in advertising. And if you're interested in advertising, go over to our website, Licking on Lending, and check out the advertising opportunities. But talking to our executive producer, he's kind of like does everything from cleaning the bathrooms all the way up to the big stuff. So we appreciate Paul so much. But he and I were looking at some statistics. It's really interesting to see the demographics and who's listening to the podcast, how many are listening to the podcast, and the success that we're having. So we're just very grateful to you for letting others know about the podcast and sharing it out. And it's partly because of the content. Like today, we've got in a hot topic segment, we've got Bill Cosgrove, President and CEO of Union Home Mortgage. Continue our series on leadership in the mortgage industry. It's been one of the biggest, I would say, crisis. It's a leadership crisis. We really need leadership in these companies. There's so many companies that are enjoying good times, but leadership is so much about creating a great environment for your company. Bill does a great job. You're going to hear about that in the Hot Topic segment. And, of course, Alice has joined me in that interview, pre-recorded that a week or so ago, and really enjoy the friendship and relationship with Bill Cosgrove in every sense of the word and the leadership he brings to our industry. In that hot topic, we're talking about the next generation of mortgage leaders and then leading. We're going to talk about Empower, the Women's Mortgage Industry Conference, and a whole lot of other things. So stay tuned all the way through to the Hot Topic segment. I want to say a big thank you for the Industry Syndicate, which we are proud to be a part of. Industry Syndicate can be listened to and see all the podcasts. We're one of them in there at industrysyndicate.com. There's so many listeners that I want to give the shout-outs to, but there is a friend. There's even a fair number of people outside the industry listen, but shout-out to Denise Hayes, who is recently become a subscriber. And so, Denise, I was tickled to hear that you are not in the industry, but you find our podcast interesting enough, and thank you. Be sure to say hi to your husband, Dave. Dave and Denise Hayes, dear, dear friends, and they're listening to the podcast regularly. You know, one thing I'll just say is Black Knight, they acquired Compass Analytics, and a lot of people missed that, so we're going to hear more about that at the MBA. Also want to say thank you to the MBA for their sponsorship of the podcast, as well as the Community Mortgage Lenders of America sponsorship, as well as Black Knight and their actionable intelligence platform, delivering growth and reducing costs. Head over to blackknightinc.com. Also, Open Mortgage, a leading buyer of reverse mortgage loans, the home of some of the top LOs in the country. And Finastra, who has their Fusion Mortgage Bot, I guess what its complete name, great, powerful tool for getting the information into their LOS. They have a front-end system, a POS system that's really solid, as well as Resex, Warehouse Lending Division of United Bank. Check out Ken Jones's interview on September 16th, The Three Pillars of Successful Leadership, as well as Lenders One in the Mortgage Collaborative, talking to David Kittle of the Mortgage Collaborative, the success they're having in membership growth. Really pretty amazing. Lenders One is the oldest collaborative, and then Mortgage Collaborative is fairly new, but both of these associations or these collaboratives or these co-ops give you as a mortgage lender real opportunity to get up close and personal with both investors and vendors. And they have some great conferences. So check out both those, Lenders One, mortgagecollaborative.com, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative. And then also a special thank you to Velma, Brent Emler, and the team there do a great job of getting our word out about our podcast each week, as well as providing services on email mortgage marketing. Knowledge Coop, Ken Perry and I were just talking the other day. Great group of people for easy training, as well as Vidyard, a powerful video communications technology enabling you to powerfully connect your customer with your people. So get your people checking out Vidyard. Also, AI Assist powered by Conversica. We also say a special thank you to Alice, Andy, Alan, and Joe. Let's run over to Rob Van Raphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. Rob?
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, President Trump announced that he intends to nominate FHA Commissioner Brian Montgomery to be the next HUD Deputy Secretary. MBA President and CEO Bob Brooksmith released a statement congratulating Montgomery and stressing that Montgomery has been integral in developing policies that improve opportunities for homebuyers and renters during his current tenure. Also last week, President Trump released two important executive orders. The first, the executive order on promoting the rule of law through improved agency guidance documents, reflects many of MBA's policy positions on agency guidance, including an affirmation that agency guidance is not legally binding on regulated entities. The second, the executive order on promoting the rule of law through transparency and fairness in civil, administrative enforcement, and education, addresses regulation by enforcement and similar agency practices. It seeks to prevent agency enforcement absent prior public notice of both the enforcing agency's jurisdiction over particular conduct and the legal standards applicable to that conduct. That's it for this week. Thanks for joining me.
Good job. And while you're checking out the MBA website, be sure to do so. Sign up for the Mortgage Action Alliance. It's easy to do. Check out Mortgage Action Alliance. It's your word known. And again, we tell everybody every week, you do not have to be a member of the MBA to be a part of the Mortgage Action Alliance and have your voice heard. Les Parker is here with us with the TM Spotlight and this week's macro view of the markets. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbites is brought to you by Ainsworth Advisors. Here comes the fun. And Jay says, it's all right. Is it all right that rates are headed higher? Will the Fed ease on October 30th? Flip a coin. Will a recession occur within 1 year? Odds are 9 to 1. What are the odds of a China deal this year? Probably 50 to 1, but that's up from last week. Yet, ho, 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 it's almost certain to happen before next Christmas. No hard Brexit on Halloween is a treat, provided no Boris tricks. No scary scenario threatens oil. So bank on what Jay Powell says. It's all right. These views are my own. Go to tmspotlight.com to subscribe to my daily newsletter.
It's all right.
Yeah, that is hilarious. Very good. Very good. Les Parker, I got to tell you. He and Gary Ketcherbone have so much fun putting that together. And it's informative. Check out tmspotlight.com to subscribe to Les's daily email. He got a really nice endorsement and recommendation from Stan Midland of Freedom on there. So check it out. It's free. The leaders listen to Les. So check it out. Joe Farr couldn't be with us live, but he recorded his update yesterday. And here's Joe's weekly mortgage market update.
Hey, Dave, this is Joe calling in on a Sunday afternoon. Wanted to get this thing recorded. Today, Monday, not a lot's going on. Nothing's on the economic calendar to look at. There could be lots going on with Brexit, and I'll talk about that here in a minute. But looking at last week first, last week was not a good week for mortgage rates. MBS prices fell about 75 basis points. Yeah, that's offsetting 50 basis point improvement that we saw the week before. The cause of the drop in MBS prices came from perceived improvement in the trade war with China. Stocks improved and mortgage rates rose as investors shifted riskier assets. Also last week, renewed hope for the Brexit deal and strong consumer data were also good for stocks. But as they were good for stocks, they weren't really good for bonds. The inflation data, though, it came out during the week. It showed that inflation for both the consumer level and the producer level was lower than it was in August and was below expectations. That's good. It's good for both stocks and bonds, as it may help the Fed feel better about cutting rates in the future. There's little information learned from the minutes of the September 17th Fed meeting that came out on Wednesday. And there are lots of Fed speakers, as I mentioned last week. Chairman Powell had three speeches last week. None of those really told the market any new information, anything that would move the market. According to the CME group, the likelihood of a Fed rate cut at the October meeting went up a little bit during last week, while the chance for another rate cut in December went down. So I guess a little more bearish there. So next week, looking at the economic calendar, there's really not much on the calendar that you should be concerned about as far as impacting MBS prices. The big report during the week is going to be the September retail sales. It'll come out on Wednesday at 8:30 Eastern time, and it is expected to show a small slowdown in sales from August. But that's in the overall sales. When you exclude automobiles, which is a volatile number, retail sales is expected to show a small improvement. You know, as I mentioned earlier, Brexit's a big deal right now. They're coming up on their October 31st deadline. Over the weekend, it was reported that some people thought a deal might be possible. Others said it wasn't all that likely. Negotiations are set to resume on Monday, so there are going to be some headlines coming out. If it looks like Brexit's going to happen with a deal, stocks would likely rise and bond prices would likely fall. If the opposite happens, we could expect to see negotiation, and we saw negotiations broke down. Chances are the opposite would occur. And then, you know, China's been the dominant factor in so much of what's been going on over the last few weeks. It will continue, I would expect, into next week. And, you know, the part there is going to be the detail. There, last week, we saw some announcements of outlines of plan, but you know, if we see details come out or the lack of details, it could affect the market. So I expect China to be part of the market moving events during the week again. That's my report, Dave. Hope you have a great show.
Thank you. Appreciate it very much. Take the time to dial in. This is really interesting volatility that's going on right now, and you got to have a good hedging service. So who are you using for your hedging service? We'd like to hear from you. And how is that hedge working? Give us a text me or get on LinkedIn, davidlicken.com. Let me know how your hedge is working. We're doing a survey and just getting some thoughts on the hedging of your pipeline and the interest rate volatility that's out there. For most people, it seems to be going well, but there are some reports of things not going quite so well. So interested in hearing about all of that. Give us a call. Look forward to it. Folks, when you look at what's, you know, going on out in the marketplace, you know, sales. I mean, it really comes down to how are you selling? And so Scott Gordon puts together this little segment called The Science of Sales. I love it. We're going to get over to it right now.
Stories help customers relax and listen. They're memorable. They establish trust. And most importantly, they speak to the part of the brain where decisions are made. We make subconscious, emotional, and sometimes irrational decisions with one part of our brain. Then we justify those decisions with another. Stories provide depth and context to facts, which leads people to making secure and informed decisions. One poll found 30% of strangers are trustworthy. But when you asked what percentage of people you know, the median answer jumped to 70%. Telling a story is the most effective way to make someone feel like they know you. Stories provide glimpses into your world and invite your customers to tell you their stories. This cements trust between the parties, and once you have a customer's trust, you've usually got their business. A 2013 study found that only 1 in 5 sales calls provides enough stories to satisfy the customer. So why tell a story? Because it works. If this sounds too good to be true, it's not. It's just the science of sales.
So now here's Alice Alvia, CMB Vice President of Education and Training for Union Home Mortgage, with this week's legislative update. Alice, how are you doing?
I'm fine, Dave. I'm happy to be here, and not only October 14th, but a couple people I really love, is their birthday today. So our son's birthday is today, Andy Jr., who you know, used to do the audio on the show. And then shout out to Jim Wickham at Union Home Mortgage. You know, it's, they always share a birthday, so
birthday celebrations.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. All right. Well, a heads up for everybody here and a couple legislative things that actually Rob and Raffles brought up on the NBA segment. They were things that I want to put a little color around a few of them. first of all, having Brian Montgomery back and as our FHA commissioner is really a win for the industry. We
yes.
haven't gotten a lot of wins in various appointments and changes in the hierarchy over at the agencies lately, and this is a good one. So for those of you who don't remember Brian or haven't been in the industry long enough for when he was a leader here for us, take a look back. As an industry, he was always one who really wanted to understand the business, knows mortgage banking inside and out, and really does a great job. So we're really happy about that. And then they also talked about the two executive orders that President Trump signed. Both of these are a benefit to the industry. So something that we want everybody to recognize, and we've actually had Mitch Keiter on the show talking about this in years past when various enforcement actions have been put on large lenders and banks, and it seems like the agency going after them, no matter who it was really going on policies or their interpretation of certain policies as opposed to things that were actually written in the law, and the CFPB was one of them. So these two orders combined really do help ensure that as a lender and any bank entity that's being audited, you're going to be audited based on current law. And if there is going to be a change in audit process, that agency is going to have to go through a rulemaking process. So they can't use a prior enforcement action as precedence for how we all should be acting. I'm not sure, I'm trying to make it in layman's terms here, right? That, well,
yeah.
If I wrote ABC lender up for doing this thing wrong, you should know that, and you shouldn't do the same thing, right? That's what these types of executive orders have been very, House and Senate bills have also tried to make sure we put a stop to. So, executive orders only go so far. They're not the same as law, but MBA did comment that they thought the CFPB and FHFA would comply with the spirit of the EOs. Another thing that caught my eye in the MBA advisory update that came out, it comes out every Monday, so y'all should watch for that, was a consumer protection law that California has under review. Now, for those of you who go, well, I don't live in California, so why do I care? We watch California very closely. It's a very big state, and they've had multiple times that they've implemented a disclosure or some law that then gradually made its way nationally. So they have a lot of influence in how some of our national politics and rules and regulations take shape. And so they're really cracking down on privacy, meaning electronic privacy. And one of the biggest things in here was requiring transparency around automated decision-making and profiling so customers can know when their information is used in making adverse decisions that impact their lives in a critical way, including employment, housing, credit, and politics. So this bill seems to loop in automated underwriting into what would be part of having more transparency and disclosures to customers. So watch out. We'll be watching that closely because of that implication. And then there's Senate Bill 2572, FHA Affordability Act. It was introduced 9/26. Obviously, not in a lot of action yet, but we want to watch this one closely. If you get a chance to nudge your senators that you want this one passed, please get out there and do that. This one will bring back FHA MIP dropping at that 78% level, which was an important piece in FHA to help them be a little more affordable. Today, there's a big difference in the MI to PMI premium comparison over the life of a loan for an FHA borrower. I'd love to see that come back. FHA is a great product. It shouldn't be hit so hard in order to keep the fund alive. And now that the fund's a little bit better, now's the time to strike on that one. Last but not least, a VA change is coming up. Everybody make sure you're watching your pipelines as we creep into October and November here. January 1st of 2020 closings will be subject to new higher VA funding fees, and the entitlement and eligibility calculations will be different. So heads up on this. Be careful as your loans are getting closer to that date. And for those of you who weren't sure, well, how long is that increase going to be in place? The bill was extended. So President Trump signed one that was going to expire in 2022. We would have only had these funding fee increases for a year or so. But then it's getting extended to 2027. So VA funding will be up for a while, and just start getting ready for it. I'm not sure what kind of programming the LOS providers are going to have ready and when they're going to have that in place. So make sure you're all prepared. Now is the time to get that put in place. So that's my report, Dave. Back to you.
Good job. Good to hear that you're feeling better, Alice. And sorry to hear you were down so solid, but it was good to hear that you powered through last week. So good to be here. And then it's really good to have the interview here with Bill. So folks, stay tuned all the way through to the end of the Hot Topic segment. Listen to Alice and I and our interview of Bill. Thank you, Alice. Have a great Columbus Day. Enjoy your day off. Appreciate you so much.
Thank you.
You bet. Folks, we're going to run over and listen to our friends at Knowledge Coop. We'll be right back after this word from Nathan Nottingham.
Hey, Nathan here from the Knowledge Coop. Do you need to teach a course? Have you considered maybe using the Socratic method? See, it's a process of using questions that engage learners to question their assumptions in order to eliminate contradictions. The primary goal is not to have listeners try to answer unanswerable questions, but to get them to develop critical thinking and to keep them engaged in your topic. Have you got some training to do? Check out the Knowledge Coop for fun and easy video-based training for the mortgage professionals out there. And it's all powered by a smart digital platform.
Good job. Appreciate you, Nathan. Looking forward to seeing Ken Perry and the group here in Austin at the annual conference. Alan Pollock could not be here this week, but he did take time to record this week's weekly tech update. Alan?
Hey, David. Thanks for having me today. It is an awesome Monday. Wanted to share this piece really quick. I saw a couple episodes after numerous people told me to watch a Netflix series called Black Mirror. And one of those episodes was interesting with everything going on that we've heard overseas about sort of social monitoring. This episode was about everybody having a phone and being rated within 5 stars. And everywhere you go and you meet, your phone immediately identifies who they are. And it tells you their rating. And based on your interaction with them, you will rate them higher or rate them lower. There's even a point where socially you can't even go to your job based on not having enough stars or enough ratings. And there was an episode, or in this episode rather, somebody was locked out for the day and he caught eyes with someone else in the office. So everybody was sort of keeping their head down. And she did not give him the rating to get him in the office. And so he then gave her a downgrade. And her entire life in the series was based on trying to get a better rating to get the apartment she wanted and to get the different things. Crazy, crazy world if that was to ever happen, which I don't think it will. But some people say that other countries are going there. Anyways, I did very quick research and listened to this stat. It basically says that it is a fact of the internet that every click, every view, and every sign up is recorded somewhere. And that is really, really powerful. And if you look at just some generic stats, the internet has 4.4 billion users. There are 3,499 billion active social media users. So a large majority of the 4.4 billion are all active social media users. And there's a bunch of other things, but you know, 91% of retail brands use 2 or more social media channels. And social media users grew by 202 million between April 2018 and April 2019. So very interesting stats when you think about the mortgage and financing and fintech and where we're going as far as giving empowering borrowers. That's really what I want to talk about today, but we really are going somewhere completely new and we aren't there yet. We've only sort of breached that surface. So a couple things, David, I wanted to chat about today. But mostly concern around the conversation around the borrower. The first is that Finastra made a great announcement. They launched a new solution called Fusion Mortgage Bot Data Insights. And what it does, based on data, of course, what it does is it benchmarks mortgage borrower behavior and demographics for banks and credit unions. And so what it does is it, of course, leverages machine technology. It looks at more than 30 different data points, and it provides really a view into everything from application exit points to geographical heat maps. It's almost, if you think about it, it's like Google Analytics on steroids specific to mortgage. And there's different platforms out there. Some take screenshots of borrower exit points, and it records the mouse on heat maps as to sections that they get stuck on or where they click more often. It's been around for a while, but putting that to more specific mortgage is obviously very interesting. And by the way, they made the announcement. I know of others that are doing similar things. So if you're not looking at your data in that kind of way, very interesting. You may want to take a look at it. The second thing I wanted to mention, really, this is gets back to our intro topic, is Fannie Mae just put out a brand new white paper, and it's called Data Standards Are the Foundation for the New Digital Model Providing Benefit Across the Board. And if you think about that statement that I made a moment ago, right, which is it is a fact of the internet that every click, every view, and every sign up is recorded somewhere, how important data is. And for us to be successful in a digital mortgage strategy, it is about adopting a standard data practice that that works. And so obviously Fannie Mae is talking about MSMO. Fantastic article. I believe heavily in MSMO. I'm happy the industry has finally moved forward. So let me tell you about this white paper. We'll put it in the show notes. You definitely want to check it out. Fannie Mae is basically saying that, hey, the data standards are the foundation of the new digital model, and they're providing benefits across the board. And what they're saying is that ultimately, what is less obvious is the industry data standards are the essential foundation to support a new digital mode. I mean, if you just think about that one statement, there's so many systems out there that have formats that were developed on a standard, generic, proprietary data format, and they have to adjust and migrate to a standard format. And so there's a lot of technology that's catching up. There's a lot of technology that then winds up having a middleman. And by middleman, I mean a transformation service that takes up speed and time. It creates mismatches. There's a lot of management that has to occur. So what Fannie Mae is basically saying is that if you build a new system on industry data standards, you will enable much more growth in what we call a digital mortgage, or the areas that we apply, you know, new technology. And they have a couple things in this white paper. One is they did a survey, and what they found from lenders, and basically they said, hey, what is it that that you need in order to digitize, and so, and what's obvious to you, right, without a lot of investigation. And the number one item was interfaces, microservices, blockchain, machine learning, the things that we hear all the time, RPA, AI, those are needed, but they have to have a flexible backbone in order to continue to expand. And then that sort of equivalates, equivalent to your digital system. So you want to look at that. It's very interesting. It all sits on the chassis, the foundation of MSMO data standards. And then as you look a little deeper at what they were talking about, you know, what they said is that they looked at the second quarter of 2019, and they found that there's heightened lender focus on the borrower experience, especially in the face of fintech competition. So we're not done on the borrower experience. We're trying to speed up the back end. We're looking to make things more accurate, you know, need less manual review of regulation and compliance and those things. But ultimately, it's still the borrower experience. And this quote from Fannie Mae basically says, mortgage lenders continue to cite consumer-facing technology as the most important business priority to maintain competitiveness, according to Fannie Mae's Mortgage Lender Sentiment Survey. And what they said is that, in addition to that quote, most lenders consider online business-to-consumer lenders their biggest competitor. So if you look at where we are, and the fact that if you look at the independent mortgage market and where banks and fintech companies are, is they're serving omnichannel experiences. They're enabling consumers to do much more. They're helping consumers continue to do business with their existing financial institution, or they're just creating a very competitive nature to independent mortgage bankers. And so when you look at that statement, it's very powerful. So Fannie is saying is, look, it is so important to have a standard digital data standard that everybody works off of, and to adopt basically MSMO, so that you can innovate faster and integrate faster and move faster. In addition, the one thing that they lay out is a couple of the benefits you get. I'm just going to mention one of them, which is RPA, right? We hear a lot about automation and workflow. RPA is extremely important because you can replace many QC and regulatory activities. You can automate activities. You can automate workflow, and you can work into an exception-based process. By the way, RPA stands for Robotic Process Automation. So with that, David, I'll leave the link. It's a fantastic white paper to read. If you're working with vendors or you're selecting new vendors, you definitely want to talk to them about adopting new data standards, or are they adopting the new data standards, so that you can expand and grow through them and your business model will be successful. Great to be here, and I will talk to everyone soon.
Thanks, Alan. Appreciate it. There's some real interesting information. For those of you, several people are just texting me saying, hey, I'd like to hear that again. That was covered a lot there quickly. You can go to our website, lickingonlending.com, and you can look at the segments of the show, and you'll be able to go down and download his or listen to just his segment. Encourage you to go do so. Andy Schell, and now that it's official, we got to say, and here's Dr. Schell, the Profit Doctor.
Well, thank you, Dave. You're so kind. So we just ended the third quarter. September the 30th is past. So accounting's busily working away to get the financials ready to go. So accounting's reconciling things and counting things and measuring things and getting ready to produce financial statements. Now, these financial statements are pretty standardized, and they get handed out, and people maybe glance at them and then put them on the shelf. And you kind of wonder, well, why don't they pay attention? Well, I can tell you one reason. I think they're boring to look at. It's black letters on white paper and a stack of numbers, and that's all there is to it. I think this is just ugly looking. So let's make the numbers better to understand by putting them in charts and graphs and making it so that we can help people see what the numbers are. And then beyond just making the numbers easier to read, let's focus on helping people understand what they say. So frequently accounting will just produce the reports, hand them out, done. And I would say that that's half the job. Getting the numbers is where it starts, but it ends with the reader of the financial statement understanding what it said. And I think that's super, super important that people actually understand what the financial reports say, so we can make it easier to look at by using charts and graphs, and we can even put colors on the lines, and we can provide an English description of the results. So all of these things help. So along the same line, this Wednesday in 2 days, I teach a class through the MBA on advanced accounting. Now, there's two more sessions left. This one tomorrow, or this on Wednesday, is on hedge accounting. And it also talks about the impact of the pipeline profits on mortgage company financial statements. So in this class, I show how to use graphs to help management understand accounting. And I go through all the hedging activity and how to record the debits and credits for all that stuff. But even beyond that, it's how to understand what happened. Does this really make sense? And then also, how does the pipeline profit affect the bottom line? And why is it that changes in volumes don't seem to make sense? So I cover extensively how to make it make sense. Because if accounting can't understand it, then how in the world is management ever going to get there? So accounting has to understand it, and then accounting has to be able to produce reports that are understandable and be able to explain it to management. I cover all this on this Wednesday. You can go to mba.org/education. Sign up for the webinar. It's really cheap. Like, if you're a member, it's basically free. So there's no reason to not understand this. And right now, with volumes going up and down, especially if rates tick up again and volumes start to decline, the profit's going to look really weird because of the pipeline profit. So let's understand what this does and how it works. Get in front of it, be able to explain it to everybody, not just management, but everybody around you. Talk about accounting. Explain what happens. So there you go, Dave.
Good job. Get a hold of Andy Schell at andy@mbs-team.com. Good friend, great contributor to all of this. Appreciate it. At this point, we end our weekly update of the market update, and we're going to now move into the Hot Topic segment. And so this week's Hot Topic is with Bill Cosgrove, President and CEO of Union Home Mortgage. And as we continue our series on leadership in the mortgage industry, and it's really the need of leadership, we're interviewing some leaders that are doing a great job and trying to get some insights into how they're leading. What are some tips and tricks that are working for them? In this interview, pre-recorded last week, we started talking about the generation of mortgage professionals, specifically millennials. How's Bill doing? He's probably doing the best job of anyone I know about there of drawing millennials into the mortgage industry, and he's doing it through an intern program. We're going to talk about that, as well as Empower and his involvement and support for it. And we talk about people, specifically the investing in world-class people in your organization, the key to invest back in to people. So without further ado, let's get into the interview that we pre-recorded with Bill. Listeners, I am excited to have back with us an industry leader, an industry icon, and I don't want to say that in an embarrassing way, but he really is. He's done so much for our industry, and his name is Bill Cosgrove, and he has a company that many of you know, Union Home Mortgage. And Bill, I just want to welcome you back to the Lickin' and Lending microphone. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Well, David, thank you. It's good to be back, my friend. Thank you.
And joining me on this is one of our regulars, of course, Alice Alvey. All of you know and love Alice for her segment on all that's going on in D.C. and the regulatory update. But Alice, it's good to have you joining me on this. And you have a unique perspective because you work for Bill inside of his company, Union Home Mortgage. So thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Dave.
Listeners, we did an interview on the Lickin' on Leadership podcast some time ago with Bill, and I encourage you to go listen to that, and we're going to put links to that interview in the show notes here. But Bill, what I want to go to on this podcast is your view of leadership. You've owned your company now for how many years, and you've been a leader in the industry for how many years?
Gosh, Dave, I've owned the company now 20 years and, you know, probably close to 17 years, been serving the industry both in Ohio and at the national level at the Mortgage Banker Association.
One of the things that I am seeing evidence of is while the core tenets of leadership probably haven't changed, how we lead has changed. I want to get your perspective in this interview, in this podcast, is what has changed, what hasn't changed, at least as relates to how you're managing your business and what you're seeing those that you respect are managing their business.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think what's happened over the years is, you know, before there were, I think in the early years, maybe three or four people at the top of any company, any organization calling the shots. And I think in today's world where we're surrounded with data, we're surrounded with media, we're surrounded with social media, immediate type of data, to me it's more of a collaborative type of management style. You want more opinions. I think the fundamentals of leadership, how you treat people, what you expect of people, the type of people that you want in leadership positions, that hasn't changed. I think that's as fundamental as it's been for the 33
right.
years that I've been in business. However, after that, you know, to me, it's more of a collaborative leadership and management process than it's ever been, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, collaboration is one of those things where it involves others, and you've been the most progressive in two areas, one of which is Empower, supporting the Empower within the organization, within the industry, and then also what you've done with millennials. I guess I should say the third thing because you started, it was under your leadership at the MBA, we have the Independent Mortgage Bankers Conference that's going on. But let's talk about the millennials. How do you see that changing? Is collaboration as a result of them? Is it something that they put a premium on? Talk about that from what you are seeing with all the millennials you're now working with.
Well, it's funny. I owe, you know, chief economist at MBA, Mike Frattantoni, credit for opening up my eyes because when I was vice chairman, actually, Mike and I went all over the country and did it about 10 times in speeches. And I heard Mike give the same presentation of the demographics in the mortgage business and how old, so to speak, the mortgage business was getting. And it was shocking to me. And so after being with Mike, you know, it drilled into me that something needed to change. It wasn't going to change on its own, and I needed to get out in front of it. So best thing we did is Al Blank and I tried to start an intern program, and the joke around Union Home is it took us about 2 years to realize that young kids don't get excited when their grandparents or someone their grandparents' age visit campus. So it took us 2 years to realize that we were the grandfathers. We didn't see it that way, but that's the way it happened. So after that, we had a couple of really fantastic interns that we saw tremendous leadership qualities in, two young ladies that were 25 years old, and we put them in charge of the program, and they have absolutely hit it out of the park. We've won multiple awards. We recently had 65 great interns. We had 300 applicants from 19 different universities.
Wow.
And it's amazing, Dave. From May until August, the whole company is just jazzed bringing these young kids in because they see life a little differently. They see mortgage process and buying a home differently and how they want to interact with a mortgage company. So not only have they come in and done great work, and they're great young kids with great work ethic, and we throw them into everything. I mean, they're in executive meetings. Other than HR things that no one's ears should hear, we expose them to everything, and the way they've responded is just off the charts. And now about 45 of them over the last 6 years have started careers at Union Home, and there'll be many more as time goes on. So to us, it's been a game changer. And I talk to IMBs all over the country to start the program for yourself. So it's been fantastic.
It's really interesting as we study IMBs and millennials and leadership. they march to a different drum. They're motivated by different things than the other generations. Maybe so, maybe not. What's your observations?
With IMBs?
Well, I'm talking about millennials in IMBs or millennials generally, how you're leading them. Has it changed that much? Is it that unique? We're hearing it is.
You know, it is. It's a little bit more unique where I think the millennials, the interns that we have, you know, they have a poise. I think because of social media, they have a poise that we didn't to make presentations in front of 100 people. You know, 30 years ago, I'd have died. Today, these kids step up and don't blink an eye. They have a lot more self-confidence. They've got great communication skills, much better than my generation did, because they're exposed in different mediums of communication. And so I think, too, that they're, you know, when people talk about entitlement, there's a little difference there. They expect more, but I think it's done in the right category. They expect more from their company. They expect the company to be more civic and community-minded, and I think that's a good thing. So all in all, I honestly believe that millennials in the workplace actually make the company better. They take the company in different ways and different thought processes. So quite honestly, it's challenging at times, but with that being said, they make you better. They really do better. They do. And then we have found ourselves, our senior management team, by the end of summer, we take the best of the best and we just sit down and talk to them and we say, what do you see here that you like and don't like? And their observations.
The feedback.
Their observations are spot on. I mean, so we've become really big fans. You know, they're not anybody out there running a mortgage company that thinks, God, I had five or six young people and this is an animal that I can't deal with this animal. I think you're wrong. They're wonderful and they've made us better. It's a challenge, but they've made us better.
I love that, and especially seeing as that's the largest single demographic group going to be buying homes, it gives you unique insights. Alice, let's get you in on that. You're Vice President of Training and Education there. You are training these people. How are you seeing how they respond? Have you had to change up? Have you had to use more social media? How has it changed in the way? And then, of course, you can ask any questions of Bill on this topic while we're on the millennials and leadership.
Well, I think the first thing I have to say is Bill has been tremendous in recognizing what this group needs. So one of the recent things that we just rolled out was for some of the college grads who finished the internship who have certain skills that we want to make sure we can hire and retain in the company, we've pulled together a leadership training program for them. So they will have a two-year run of working with various departments and really getting a deep dive into how the whole company runs with the idea that at the end of that 2 years, we'll have a long-term place for them within the company and also have really given them a strong foundation to move quickly up into management. So he's really made a tremendous investment. So when you talk about what do the millennials want, how do we make sure that we're keeping them engaged, that's just one example of you've got to have solid programs where they can see a career and see the vision. And Bill has done a great job of building that for them. We also recently rolled out a Future Leaders program as well, which is a little bit different for folks who are already at the company, have shown their skills through various projects, and just earned their way into another full-year program that offers them a tremendous amount of really, I call it like a leadership rocket fuel for them advance. So I'd love to get Bill to talk about these programs and his vision for them, because really I just try and execute on the vision, and he's the one with this tremendous vision.
Let's talk to the visionary, Bill.
Well, that's a lot of pressure. Alice is being very generous. She's a very key executive at Union Home. So I think, Dave, you know, here at Union Home, and I think any successful company, we really don't have a budget of how much we invest in people through Union University, which Alice runs, and anything we could do, you know, to educate, create leadership opportunities. Have them understand the mortgage business. You know, whether we realize it or not, whether it's great companies, FedEx, Progressive Insurance, you name a great company, and they are very intense about going after talent. And I think in the mortgage business, certain companies have figured that out. Many of us have not. But at the end of the day, it's talent and teamwork that really take customer service and winning in the mortgage business to the next level. So we just believe in investing in people. If you invest in world-class people, you're going to get a world-class result, and it's really that simple.
Without diving too deep into this, what are some of the programs that you offer for training and leadership, especially as it relates to the millennials?
Alice, you could jump in, but when the interns come in the first week of May, we have an incredible program for them that's already spelled out. They interact lunch and learns with executives at the company. They spend a week to 10 days in our, what we call our Rudy huddle, which is where we basically run the company. The other key interns, the top performing interns, they shadow senior executives. At the end of this summer, we give them a project. We have them deep dive. We talk to them. And actually, the appraisal management issue problem, where lack of appraisers and where that's going, and we give them a big problem to solve. At the end of the year, we have them break up in teams, and they just do absolutely an amazing job. They blow us away, really, with their analytics and their performance. Alice, I'm sure I'm going to turn it over to you. I'm sure I'm missing a few things that we do with the young people for the program.
Well, I think you hit on the big things, and that's the projects. We also let them decide where they want to be as they're going through the program. So they, you know, we look at their skills and their field of study, and they may start in one area, and they may go, you know what, I want to go try this department over here. And we let them shadow various departments. They're not just stuck in one place for the entire time also. So that makes a big difference. And then we do make sure all of us as managers with all the touch points that they have to make sure they really feel a part of the company, that the work that they're doing is meaningful. We don't just have them here, you know, standing at the copier. We really put them to work so that they learn learn the business.
Yeah, and the other thing we've learned, David, too, is at the end of the year when we do our sort of graduation night, we bring the parents and grandparents and learn. Yeah, we've learned, we just learned that the last couple of years, and we've learned that the parents and grandparents want to know, you know, at that point they're still called a child, right? Where is my kid spending their days? So they know when it's Miami of Ohio or Ohio State University or Michigan State or wherever it is, but during the summer. So we've learned to get the family involved as well. And so it's just, you know, it's a really cool program, and we learn a lot from it. And make no mistake, I mean, we you know, it has a purpose, and that purpose is to introduce young, talented, wonderful young people to a great industry. No one knows, last thing I'll say, no one knows, this is what I say to them day one when I get the chance to talk to them. Inside the mortgage banking business, there's 20 different great career opportunities. There's 20 different avenues of a career in mortgage banking, and no one knows that from the outside. And that's one of the things that make the mortgage banking very dynamic. It's very diverse, and there's many career paths within a thriving independent mortgage banking company, and that's exciting.
I couldn't agree with you more. There are so many avenues, and we have to find ways to draw our emerging college students into this industry, or we're in trouble. And you're doing a great job of it. I'm so thrilled. I want to get a film crew up there to just follow you around so we can duplicate this in other companies, because I think it's such an important initiative. I want to shift, Bill, just from this. I could stay on this topic for a long, long time, but it's doing what you're doing with millennials, and I want to get over to what we're doing at Empire. But I want to shift to the older generation, the ones that are stuck, that are ones are know they need to change, but they're struggling with it. What would you say to them?
Yeah, to me, it's about who you have around you. So, you know, it's a healthy business. Most of us, a lot of us, you know, maybe half of us now that own independent mortgage banking companies, we started them from nothing. We started them small. And let's face it, all of us have a certain level of talent. There's things we can do very well, and there's things we don't do so well. So I think the key to it for me is to always, it's the fundamental, Dave, of always hire people that have talent that you don't, right? They got to be wonderful human beings,
yes.
Number one. They got to be people that you're proud to be associated with. That's a given. But other than that, you've got to hire tremendously talented people and give them an avenue to run. And I think if you do that and you just surround yourself with great, committed people where ego is set aside and it truly is about team and about caring for each other and about the result, I think if you create as a leader and an owner, if you create that environment, you push each other to the next level. And I think, you know, getting involved in MBA in other associations where
right.
you're in positions where you can actually talk to other leaders of companies to just, you know, am I on track? Am I off track? Am I totally crazy? Where, you know, get mm-hmm. their feelings and then have four or five of them that you can trust and talk to. So I think it's all about what our mom and dad's taught us is you are who you surround yourself with. And so I think
true.
You just got to surround your, yeah, I think you got to just surround yourself with people that have a brilliant mind that are always searching to take, there's always a better way, right? And if we don't find it, someone's going to run over us and find it. So I think
yep.
it's really a matter of the culture that you create.
I want to tell a quick story on you, Bill, because there's someone who I know, and he came to me, and he was interviewing, thinking of which company to go to work for, and he ended up not going to work for you, and it was your choice, and I want to talk about your selection process, because he recognized the wisdom in it later. So you have a test or some type of profile that you run on people that you're hiring, if I'm correct. At least this is what I understood from him.
Yeah, we're big fans of DISC assessments, and we don't use them strictly solely, you know, red light, green light when it comes to hiring. But Dave,
yeah.
In my career, for some God reason, and I don't fully understand it, at times there's a lot of ego in our industry.
Yes.
And
there is.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny that anybody that I talk to, this is mortgage banking, I think, is the ultimate team sport. And as a young person,
yes,
I started in my 20s, I was part of a couple organizations that had wonderful people that were allowed, if they didn't, you know, if you didn't get the answer you wanted, you can act like a 2-year-old. And good people
mm-hmm.
became average people that became disengaged people that end up leaving the organization. So I come from a very loving home. My parents were working class people, but it was a wonderful, wonderful place to grow up. And I never was raised with that dysfunction. And so I was raised to respect people and so forth. And when I got in mortgage banking, I fell in love with the business. But I was sometimes shocked at the behavior of people and, you know, loan officers
yep.
when they heard the word no and so forth. And so I realized, I saw with young eyes, not in management, not in anything else, but I saw early in my career how dysfunction killed organizations and killed mortgage companies. And when I bought Union Home, I said one thing. Is that we would not be that type of organization. I don't know what we'll be. I can't. I'm not the brightest person in the world, but I sure in the hell know who we're going to be, and what we're going to stand for. And I think
yeah.
that has served us well all these years. And so for us, it's a matter of who fits the team and who's able to fit the team. And that's not an indictment of someone that we don't hire. It's just that we believe that in all levels of the organization, dysfunction kills companies, and we want to attack
yep.
the hell out of problems, not people. And so I think that's where it all comes
good.
From.
I love that, and I bring that up only because I think more people should do that. There's a number of leading companies that we consult to that do that, and they have a much more successful hiring process. This person was really crushed because I had built you up and told him, oh, if you get a job there, that'd be awesome. And his personality didn't fit. He had a very strong personality. I learned later. And so there are stories like this that come out that I think is so important. And Bill, we could just go on and on about things that have made your company successful. You referenced how you got in, your family. Again, I referenced that Lincoln on a Leadership podcast, an interview I did with you, and have people go back and listen to that. Can you tell that story about your parents and how you got into the business? It's such a good story. Well, let them go back and listen to that. I want to talk about Empower, because another thing that you're doing that is so impactful, not only on your company, but on the industry, is you really are a big supporter of what Marsha Davies is doing with Empower, and you are not just supporting it with words, but you're putting some money and investment behind it, and you're flying people to this conference that we now have in Austin, wherever the annual conference is. You have a good representation of up-and-coming female executives, and I applaud you for that. What's behind that? What did you see there that caused you to do that? And then Alice, chime in on this.
Yeah, so it's interesting that, you know, it stems early on from, you know, really the way I was raised. My mother was a wonderful lady, very talented. She was for the most part, she worked either in warehouses, type of on a line where she got paid piecemeal. And when she couldn't do that anymore physically, she became a nanny and worked with families, pretty wealthy families in Greater Cleveland, to help raise their kids. And Mom was a wonderful, wonderful lady. And I was very impacted by my mother, very close to my grandparents. So my grandmothers were also a big influence in my life. They had huge, wonderful personalities. So I was, without ever knowing it, I was very, very close with my mom and my two grandmothers. And it was interesting, as I started in business and having a business career, I noticed that the when it came to management, and I'm talking about the 80s and early 90s, women just didn't have almost the desire to be part of management. Maybe they didn't feel that they could do it, or they weren't welcome to that. So I learned from the millennials, and I try to, from the interns, I say, you know, I'm not a psychologist. Everybody knows that. However, I noticed that the young men come in with a whole lot of bravado and confidence with little talent to back it up, but yet young ladies come into our organization with all the talent in the world, but not the confidence they need or want or will grow into to be successful. So I just think Empower and our dear friend Marsha Davies, I just love her and her husband, Scott. Oh, she's wonderful. But I think Empower, I can't tell you why it's like that, but young ladies or ladies of all ages, I think need a special support system different than men. And I think if you give them the correct support system, and Empower does that, they will obtain new and different heights in their career that originally when they look in the mirror, they probably didn't think they could obtain. So I just see Empower being the rocket fuel that a lot of ladies of all ages, of every age, need to obtain levels in their career that they want. And if not, have a support system, because let's face it, women in the workplace have, you know, being moms and so forth, they have a different burden and an extra burden many times that men don't. I can't tell you why. I don't know why, but it's just true. And so I that's why I love Empower. I'm proud to be part of it. It started how I was raised and just what I've seen and witnessed during my career. And I think Empower has come at the right time in mortgage business and for the right reasons. And I think many, many females of all walks of life and all positions in the mortgage business, executive or not, or anything in between, are benefiting from it. And myself, I'm proud, and Union Home is proud to support it. It's just that simple.
Alice, you've witnessed, you and I were together in Washington, D.C. I had my recording podcast booth set up for recording interviews with many of the leaders, and you brought a lot of the individuals that were privileged to go last year in D.C., and you'll be joining me again at the recording booth this year, and we'll be recording interviews. I'm hoping we can record some of the interviews from some of the Union Home gals that are attending Empower this year, but you'll be joining there. But talk, Alice, a little bit about what you're seeing. What are you hearing the impact that Empower has as they come back from one of these events into the marketplace. Do you have a story or two that you could share with us?
I do. So our partners get very motivated. We have a group now who is pulling together some regular activities that will continue here at the company. So there'll be, you know, a super secret now, big announcement coming out at our women's event that we are joining with MBA on Saturday as part of our annual partners celebration. Bill has graciously allowed that we'll have all 600 plus women at Union Home Mortgage getting together for a presentation by Marcia Davies. So we're doing this in conjunction with the Mortgage Bankers Association and Empower. And as a result of all this energy, we have our group, Christina Fagan and Ashley Rivera, who are pulling together just a women's resource group at the company as a whole that will continue on throughout the year with different get-togethers. You know, and as Bill said, and really as the Empower mission is, it's really just to strengthen the networking opportunities, help individuals with professional growth and development, and really just to share ideas. And so we're really looking forward to that kickoff event that's happening at our annual partner celebration, and then we'll be ongoing throughout the year.
Well, I just applaud you both, what you're doing within the organization, taking not just the event that the MBA has, but literally bringing it inside your company. Bill, I just applaud you for that kind of leadership. That's why I want you on regularly on this podcast, talking about the innovative things that you're doing. And sometimes they don't seem so innovative, but the results they bring, you realize just how much innovation is happening. We talk about innovation, we think about always technology, but it's investing in people and innovating by bringing in networking people, supporting them. There's some wonderful things some companies are doing. I'm thrilled with what you're doing there. Hopefully, Bill, you can swing by the sound booth when we're interviewing some of your team. If you can make your way over to where Empower is on Saturday, I'd love to have you join in and tell some of the stories about some of these gals that are there. If it's possible, great. Alice will be there, and we'll be doing that. So really appreciate both of you taking time today to get on this interview and share with these things with so many of our listeners. Bill, I'll wrap it up with this. What are the most important things you would want up-and-coming executives or those that have been around for a little while but are looking for a new life? What would you say to them?
You know, I think, David, it comes down to this. You know, and I'll tell you, I learned this being an officer of MBA when I had the opportunity to become friends with a lot of executives and see how companies did it. You know, regulatory practices are regulatory practices. Put that aside. You got to do the right thing every day when it comes to regulatory. But at the end of the day, there's so many roads and so many ways to get to the level of success you want. No, there's no one right way. I think there's many right ways. I also know that consumers are going to continue to expect more from us. And so the demands, you can't stay the same. You can't stay in the same position. You cannot have the same beliefs or the same strategy. It all evolves. And I think at the end of the day, you've got to be somebody and surround yourself with people that want to innovate, want to evolve, want to get and need to get better every day. And that's really what it's going to take to win in the future. So the world is evolving quick, probably faster than a lot of us want it to. Consumer behavior, yeah. Right? Consumer behaviors are changing in rapid like fashion. And I think in the mortgage industry, we've got to stand up and meet those demands, but do it the right way, do it compliantly. And I'll tell you that off of the crisis of 10 years ago, there's some regulatory things that need to be worked out where companies need to follow the regulations.
Yes.
That needs to happen. And I think in some areas that's not happening and it's not right. But that being set aside, I think as whether you're an independent mortgage banker like we are, a regional bank, community bank, a large institution, I think we're so much better at regulatory issues. We're better with consumers, better in servicing. So I'm really proud of the industry because I think over the last 10 years, our companies have become more mature, better executing, and there's a lot to be proud of in our industry. And so I'm excited to be part of it, and I thank you for your time today and having me on your show. It's a great show.
I always love having you here. Appreciate it. Thank you, Alice, for joining in. Appreciate it so much. Folks, we just had as our guest Bill Cosgrove. Very thrilled to have him, President, CEO, owner of Union Home Mortgage, along with Alice Halvey. Encourage you to stop by the booth for those of you that will be attending the Empire event. Again, Marcia has opened it up. If you listen to the previous week's interview with Marcia Davies, she opened up the conference this year so some of us guys can step in. Previous conferences, it was only women, but I think more and more guys need to put their head in the door and check out what's going on. Again, it's for women, and it's an art industry, and I support it so much. So I thank you for what Bill's doing, also what he's doing in the area of working and drawing millennials into our industry. I want to say a special thank you to all of you that are listeners. Next week, we've got David Savage. Dave Savage, the mortgage coach, as well as Ryan Hills, who is with Movement Mortgage. These are social media masters and maestros that produce some great content. We're going to be talking about more about what are they doing? What are the lessons they're learning? We're talking about how you can get your message out. Dave Savage had Ryan and I on, so it was the three of us being interviewed. Actually, Dave set it up where someone else interviewed the three of us on his podcast and on his video blog. So anyway, encourage you to check out next week. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, Black Knight, Open Mortgage, Finastra, Resex Warehouse Lending, a division of United Bank, the MBA, Lenders One, as well as the Mortgage Collaborative, and CMLA, Community Mortgage Lenders America, Velma, as well as Knowledge Coop, Vidyard, and AI Assist. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. See you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.